Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. With Mobile's award-winning garden expert and chief horticultural advisor for Mobile Botanical Gardens, Bill Finch. We'll talk about living and growing on the Gulf Coast. Now, your personal yard and garden consultant, here's Bill Finch.
Hey, welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Since we never do anything except talk about gardening here, that's why I've continued to call this Plain Gardening, even when Tiny Tim doesn't play.
You're not going to change it to Plain Lawns, are you?
Plain Lawns, no. It's, but so any rate, there it is. Listen, there were a few things that I want to finish up. We're going to talk about our seed resolutions, and we're going to broaden our seed resolutions if David Hubble will allow me. We're going to broaden our seed resolutions just a little bit to include plant resolutions for the new year. But so, listen, there are two or three folks, and you may have seen this, who have sent me pictures or have talked to me about stem damage on their greens. And, you know, in each case, I could blame it on cutworms. And I won't rule out that it's a cutworm or an insect in the soil. If it is an insect or a cutworm in the soil, if they started the damage, then the issue may be just seal out those insects. The way to do that is to build a little collar, and that works really well. And you can make the collar, and I've talked about this before, you can make it out of, a milk carton or anything like that. Just a little collar to put around the plant because the cutworm won't crawl over it, and the chances are he's not going to come up inside the collar, and there it is. The other thing that can be a problem is there are some rots that develop in certain brassicas under unusual situations, unusual conditions, with excess nitrogen and lots of moisture. You can get the inner core of those can begin rotting. I don't think that's what this is. It doesn't look like it to me, but I can't rule it out. In which case, you know, you might want to be careful about over-fertilizing. That's usually when that occurs and during extra wet conditions. If the soil stays wet, if your soil is wet, if you don't have a lot of organic matter in your soil, if your soil stays wet, that can cause that too. That can be another issue. But I also think that mulches around the collar of the plant can also cause problems. Now, because this is the third time, I'm going to call Mr. Olive, and we're going to talk about it, and we're going to see if we can figure out what this could be. But I'm pretty sure it's one of those three things. But it mostly I think it's the excess moisture this time of year. I don't think it's a cutworm. I don't think it's the cutworm. I think it's the excess moisture. I plant in beds that are really well drained, and I do that by providing plenty of organic matter for the soil, which keeps those soils really well drained. It keeps the moisture from pooling right around the roots. And then I don't use a mulch as thickly. Well, I don't use a mulch, really, in winter. I plant the plants close together, so they basically seal out other weeds. But you want to use mulches only to get rid of the weeds this time of year, not to snug up against the plants, because the plants actually like growing out of bare ground this time of year. You get better air circulation, better moisture. I feel obligated to follow up with that, so that you understand. So the other thing is, Tony, says keeping David, you can follow through on this. If dogs are digging in one place and it's driving you crazy, Tony says, take the dog's poo. One. Yeah. And you put it where the hole is that they're digging, and they'll stop digging. That's great. Of course, they're going to dig somewhere else. So at some point, you got to cure the dog of digging. I'll leave that to y'all to figure that one out. or you've got to have a, you know, it's a tough one. We don't want to get, we don't want to go there again. We've been there many times, David, have we not? And I don't think David has gotten bored with it because it's just, it's just too hard. It's just too hard. So lots of issues. So what are the seed resolutions for the coming year? Now we're going to get to it. What are my seed resolutions for the coming year? Well, I have a number of them. And I'm in the process of, I'm actually in process right now, of seeing how they work. One of them was do beans better. Do better beans. Do beans better. Now, I know that's a little broad, but it's because there's so much opportunity for beans in this climate. Not just peas, but beans. And peas are part of it. So one of the things, that one of the experiments I'm doing right now are fava beans. Can I talk about fava beans? Can I use that word out loud? Fava beans. Fava beans are not beans, I will say, that are traditionally associated with the South. And there are reasons for that. They like cool weather. They don't like summer growing conditions. But they overwinter really well. They're incredibly good at overwintering. So you plant them in October, maybe November. I'm still experimenting. October, November. Let them develop some size. And you know, the great thing about favas are a European veg. They're not like other beans. The beans themselves are gigantic. If you've ever eaten favas, is there another name for them that people would get when they're eating them here? I think they probably call them favas. The beans are delicious. You can eat the pods. You can, if you eat them small, but the beans are really big. I love the taste of favas. I'll say they're not the most productive bean in the world, but on the other hand, they grow all winter long. So you get to grow them during winter when your garden would have nothing else. They're actually creating a little bit of nitrogen there. They're good for the garden soil. They're a great ground cover, if nothing else. You can just use them to cover the ground in your garden in winter to keep weeds from coming in. And you know, the other good thing is the greens, fava bean greens, are absolutely delicious. Now, other beans may also have good greens. We're going to talk about that. Just pick the tops of those fava greens, and they're really delicious. Now, that means they're really useful. You can use the greens. You can use the beans. The beans will develop in March and April. You're going to have a short window, but it's a great window, a lot of fun eating those beans. They're really quite delicious. They're really distinctive, big beans, a lot of fun. So I'm experimenting with different favas to see which is the most productive, which is the most moisture resistant, which is a big issue here, which is the most cold hardy, which is not a great winter to figure that one out. I'm experimenting with different favas. So there's my first bean of the year, which is actually a vetch, but we're going to call it a bean anyway since everybody else calls it a bean, fava beans. And then I'm going to make sure that I have my beans planted at the right time. I'll tell you, I have about settled on a bean called Selma Zesta. One of the keys was in planting Selma Zesta, which is a bean. If the word Selma sounds familiar, it's because Park Seed, when they introduced this bean to the public back in the 40s or 50s, actually developed it at their Selma Trial Gardens in Selma, Alabama. I will tell you that Selma is the second most humid place on the planet. Mobile, of course, is the first most humid place on the planet. And if things do well in Selma, I can think, you know, there's a good chance they're probably going to do okay here. And Selma Zesta does great for us. It's one of the great beans. It's one of Alabama's great beans. It's actually, it was actually a guy, I think from Alabama and North Alabama, actually offered the seed to Parks. It has proved to be a great bean. Rattlesnake bean is great, but I actually like Selma Zestas just about as well. The key was getting them planted at the right time and in the right way. We can talk a little bit more about that. All of these things need trellises, to make them really good. And the other thing, the other bean that I'm going to work on is butter beans, getting it right, getting them at the right time. There's another bean that I'm working on. It's a tropical bean. It's the winged bean. It's very good. We'll talk more about it. But here, this is getting beans right. Fava beans are my big trial. I've got four varieties of favas out there right now. I'm going to kind of see which ones I like the best, which ones come to seed earlier. Just a lot of different factors. This won't be the first and last trial with favas, but favas is where I'm starting. Turnips. The music's not going to let me finish this, is it? We're going to be back. We're going to talk about my other seed resolutions for the new year. I wish you would call so I could hear what yours are.
Me and my best friend Lillian and her blue Deckhound dog Gideon, sitting on the front porch, cooling in the shed, singing every song the radio played, waiting for the Alabama sun to go down to red dirt girls in a red dirt town. Me and Lillian. Just across the line in a little southeast of Meridian.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Welcome back. It's the Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. David Hubble got me started thinking, you know, what we really should have devote the second part of our show to our New Year's seeds resolutions. We can talk about other things and feel free to call us, but that's a good thing. And I said one of mine is beans and fava beans. I'm in the midst of that experiment. That's actually occurring. Maybe that's not fair since I started it last fall. But it's an experiment that I won't really know the results of until the end of this year, and then I will experiment some more next winter as well. You know, favas, by the way, are something that we really only can do well in South Alabama. I'm trying to think if there's a way to do them a little farther north. I think it's hard. It's going to be hard. It's going to be hard. It's possible, but it's going to be much harder. But they do real well for us down here in South Alabama if you plant them at the right time. Turnips. I want to get back to turnips. I want to say this real quickly. Tara, hold on just a second, because this is a good thought, and I need to. Tara wants to talk about tomato experiments, and I think this is very good. I wanted experimenting with turnips because I really have begun to appreciate that turnips have a distinctive taste that is just not reproducible from other greens. You know, turnips, I really love the taste of turnips, not only the greens, but the roots. So I'm looking for turnips that have both great greens and great roots, because I'm really beginning to appreciate the roots and how many different ways you can use the roots. Really a great thing, turnip roots. Great, great way to cook them. Delicious. We can talk about cooking turnip roots, some of the ways I've done it. It's a lot of fun. But I'm trying different types of turnips. What is the problem with – and I will tell you, with every variety of turnip I have tried, there's one problem. It is the problem of flea beetles. And I they're beetles. And we're going to call them flea beetles. There's a lot of different kinds. But these are really the ones that are operating in winter. And they can be a big problem. And they get these little shot holes. So I wanted to mention this, that I'm experimenting with turnips, and I've got a lot of great varieties of turnips, Japanese varieties of turnips, a lot of fun to experiment with. I'm going to experiment with more of them. My initial experiments have been disappointing, but now I'm going to try those experiments again, because I think we may have a way up to deal with the flea beetles. Not every yard is going to have the flea beetle problem. I have suggested in the past that ashes can help, and I think they do indeed help. But they have to be reapplied a lot, and I'm not sure they're the best solution. So I've been thinking of more. One thing is, if you think that you might have a problem with flea beetles, go ahead and get those yellow sticky cards. They're not too expensive. You can get them from several places. Yellow sticky cards that bugs stick to. You'll be able to see if you've got a lot of flea beetles sticking to that, you know you got a problem. The yellow sticky cards, if you were to space them close enough, probably would help. It probably actually would help. And so that's one way of doing it. There's a you can do a trap crop as well, but the unfortunate thing is that there's almost nothing that the flea beetles like better than the turnips. So they're going to be on the turnips. And so, you know, there it is. So the product that I'm going to try, and you can try it too, I'm trying this simultaneously with my seed trials because turnips are a good thing, and I don't want to have to give up on them. Spinosad, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D. And I like using it much better than I like using things like 7. Spinosad is a bacterium. It's similar in concept to the disease that we call dipeller thuricide that affects only caterpillars, and I recommend it. I haven't tried Spinosad before. I'll tell you, I have not, because I haven't had a good use for it. In this case, I think the flea beetles have given me good reason to use Spinosad. There are several products that use it, S-P-I-N-O-S-A-D, Spinosad. And it is very safe for humans. It is very safe for humans. It is even safe for most insects, which is a kind of a good thing. Most predatory insects don't ingest enough of it to cause them harm. It's mostly affected by plants, by bugs that are eating the leaves of the plant. And so it's considered very low, relatively low toxicity to beneficial insects. And this is very important. I won't go into the details, but that's one of the things I look for in a pesticide is, does it leave my beneficial insects alone? Because if it wipes out the beneficial insects, then I have seven devils worse than the first. Does that make sense? We can go into what that means. Spinosad, turnips, and I got some other seed resolutions. I'm not through, but Tara, we're going to get to Tara. Tara, I'm listening. What are your seed resolutions?
Oh, well, listen, you just helped me some with this. Can I ask a turnip question first?
Yes.
With the flea beetle thing, I've dealt with that before in my grandparents' garden, going back that long.
Right.
Would hanging pots, I mean, it, unless, of course, you're trying to grow, you know, lots and lots to feed a large family or something, since they make beautiful plants to put in hanging pots and stuff, would keeping them up off the ground actually keep them from being as susceptible to flea beetle?
What an interesting question. It may.
So I should try it then and tell you.
You should try it, yes. And, you know, even having them in a container may help too. I think a hanging plant, of course, turnips would do fine in a hanging container as long as you didn't get rooted turnips. If you got an all top or something like that,
which seven are, top.
Whatever. And get them get one that doesn't produce big roots, and I think they should do fine in containers. And so Tara, this is your experiment. Would you please do this for me?
I have another one.
And tell me how to do it.
Tell
me whether it works.
If I may.
And do you indeed have flea beetles? Of course, the experiment doesn't work if you don't already have flea beetle problems.
No, I didn't do turnips this year. Other stuff happened and yada, da, da, da. But what did happen, and as usual, it's unexpected and accidental, I have a tomato that actually has three tomatoes on it. And it's a celebrity. I do know that. It was a gift from someone, and it was very late in the season, and I didn't want to say what I was thinking at the time, which was, this is so late in the season, there is no way this baby's going to make it, you know. But it's got three tomatoes on it. One is about tennis ball size, one is about golf ball size, and the other is marble size.
Yeah.
Now, what I'm wondering is, since we're coming up on, I think the recommended tomato seed planting is about 2 weeks away, right?
That's tomato seed planting is, you know, for some people, it might not even be bad to plant this week. But yes, I would say sometime within the next 3 weeks, you got to get pretty serious about it.
Okay. Well, my question here is, again, this is not for feeding a large family. This is just an experiment for, you know, people who are eccentric gardeners.
Right.
If I do a tomato clone that's water rooted, will the thing seems to be incredibly healthy. I've got it in about a 1 gallon container, I think, maybe 2 gallons, and that's set down inside well, it's going to be discarded soon, styrofoam container in an area that's up against the south side of the house, protected by winds. And also on the very cold nights that we've had, I took another that's going to be a galvanized wash tub that props perfectly on top. And the house plant next to it, you know, I throw a little sheet over it when it's like really, really cold.
So in short,
there's another shrub. So yeah, so it's well protected.
In short, yes.
Yeah.
I think it's a good idea. I mean, here's if you've got this celebrity and it doesn't have a lot of diseases and it looks pretty healthy, yeah, take a cutting off of it. Put it, don't root it in water, root it in soil if you can. It's going to do much better rooted in soil. I do root things in water sometime, but just go ahead and root them in soil. Take several cuttings, put three cuttings in a pot. Root them there. It needs to stay warm enough for them to root. So you might want to take it inside for them to root.
Right, yeah, which is why I was thinking the cutting, definitely.
And you might have to keep it inside.
Until close to March.
yeah. But, you know, you can certainly bring it outside on the warmer days. But I think it would be it's a good thing to do. And it certainly isn't an easy way to do it. Taking those cuttings, as long as they're fairly disease-free, the younger growth tends to be less susceptible. The younger, more rapid growth tends to be less susceptible to most diseases. Wow. Celebrity is a fairly disease-resistant tomato. And I think it might work just fine.
Well, I'll get back to you on that one, too, then. And may I ask one more question respectfully, please?
Yes, ma'am.
About peppers. Can you clone peppers the same way that you clone tomatoes?
Yes. Peppers don't strike as easily. They don't strike roots as easily as tomatoes do. I think for peppers, I probably would do a layering with a pepper. So layer them, which means, you know, drop the plant down, scratch the base just a little bit, leave a little bit of stem sticking up out of the soil, put part of the tip down in the soil, leave the end of the tip sticking up out of the soil, leave it attached to the mother plant, put a staple in or a paper clip to hold it down, and leave it there until it roots.
Thank you, and thank you for the seed advice, too.
All right. Good to hear from you, Tara.
Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, listen, welcome back. It's a Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. Lots to talk about. We've talked about a lot of things. My zip whip is only half there, so if you need to get me a message, go ahead and give me a call because my zip whip is not zipping the way it should. So a lot of different things. We had some great information. The theme this half of the show, while we're winterizing, which was the first half of our show. What do we do when we winterize in Mobile? We get out and we enjoy the garden. And one of the things we do is we plan for the new year in terms of seeds, thinking, what can we do better? I'll tell you another thing that I'm doing, and you should do this too. I hope you'll all help me. Basil. I've already talked with John Olive about this at Auburn University. John, I'll remind him to make sure he gets the seeds. We've had a problem with basil downy mildew. It's a disease that started affecting basil. Basil was one of our great go-to greens for summer. I mean, it was for me, basil was for summer what turnips are for winter. What collards and kale are for winter. I mean, it was just this wonderful everyday green that was just beautiful. You could do it. You could use it in so many different ways. I had so much fun using it. And then we got basil downy mildew. And that has really caused me to rethink. And I've tried several things, because the basil downy mildew, if you've gotten it, if you've tried basil lately in Mobile, and your plants just sort of they just sort of disintegrated. Just all the leaves got cruddy looking and fell off, and they got this black and brown and just ugly looking stuff. It's basil downy mildew. Got little black specks on the underside, which you might need a magnifying glass to see, but it's pretty visible. Basil downy mildew. It is a new disease that we introduced. We keep introducing diseases. We are the typhoid Mary of the world. We have done terrible things to this world, and we continue to do it, introducing diseases. The basil. We introduced basil downy mildew. What are we going to do? There's been some work to look for basil varieties that are not susceptible. Most of the varieties that are not susceptible are very strong flavored. They're not; they don't have the basil flavor that we're kind of used to. Some of the Asian basils may be a little more resistant, but even there, even though those anise flavored ones, even they're not as good. There was, however, there's been some work done with a basil from where was that from? Was it Mozambique? Someplace obscure, maybe in India or in Africa. I can't remember. I think it was in Africa. Or at least wouldn't be obscure to us because we don't live over there. It was a really good Mozambique, maybe. I can't remember. Any rate, the great basil that was resistant. It was had a very strong anise flavor. I'm going to try it this year because it's not as strong as some of the Asian basils. I'm going to try that. But there has also been some breeding where that was crossed back to some of our typical Italian basils that most of us grow. And it's producing resistant varieties. I don't know whether it's Cornell or one of the institutions doing it. It is not available to average gardeners, which I find very frustrating. But commercial growers can try it. They're trialing it this year. They may make it available to average gardeners, to us folks. But I've gotten John Olive to grow it this year, so he's going to try it. I'm going to try some other varieties, including the parent of this new downy mildew-resistant variety. And then I'm going to try some other greens. And what are the greens? What are the greens of summer that we can sort of, you know, with so many greens for winter, but greens for summer are tough. One of the greens that I've really taken a shine to is Okinawan spinach. And we'll talk more about that. It's been really good. It's been very productive. It's still producing. I've got a ton of it. I'm not picking it now since I got so many other greens, but it has proved to be a great green for summer. It's really quite delicious. It's really good. Very distinctive flavor when you eat it raw. When it's cooked, I really am enjoying the texture of it. It's really been a great green, and I'm really enjoying it mixed with other things. It's supposed to be really nutritious. Yeah, yeah, yeah. The nutritious stuff is kind of a little bogus. I mean, if you're eating stuff fresh out of the garden, almost anything except lettuce is going to be really nutritious. Your kale's nutritious. All those things, man, you're getting everything you need out of those kind of plants. Okinawan spinach is one of those. Much better than lettuce. Really good thing to eat. So I'm looking for those, looking for more and more of those summer greens. Summer greens. That's seeds for summer greens. What do we do for greens during summer? That's a pretty important thing. Just like in winter, I'm thinking of, gosh, I wish I had more fruits because I got plenty of greens. But, you know, carrots would be really good during winter. I am still working with carrots. I will tell you, I've got a problem with carrots. I don't like to admit this because people like Johnny, he ain't got a problem with carrots. I got a problem with carrots. And the problem is my carrots are germinating, everything's doing fine, and something is eating the fire out of the young plants. I don't know why. I don't know what it is. I got to figure it out. It's one of those things. You know, I've had the carrots produce. I've had them come up in some, but something is eating the fire out of those carrots. So I've got to figure out what's the best time to plant carrots. What is eating the fire out of them? Is there anything I can do out of them? I mean, the carrots just don't develop any size before they – I've watched it happen. And I mean, I've watched them get torn apart. Seedlings come up. They're coming up great. They're germinating great. Everything's coming up. And then before they get to, you know, as tall as the joint of my thumb, something's eating them up. And I don't know what it is. Got to figure it out. You know, I wish – I think having chickens would help. I liked having my chickens. They were so much better. At cleaning those things up, so much better at cleaning those things up. So I know I've gotten a couple of messages, a couple of text messages. I'm not going to be able to read them till I get figured out how to deal with this zip whip issue, but we'll do that here in just a minute. But meanwhile, give us a call. Tell us about your seed preferences for the coming year. Let's talk about that. What are your seed resolutions? What are your seed resolutions for the coming year? So, Clint, I'm actually seeing, will there be a tomato palooza this year? I don't know the answer to that. I will have to talk to the folks at Mobile Botanical Gardens about that. I won't be running that show if they do it, but we'll see. Dan is sending me some great pictures of mustard greens. What a beautiful thing those mustard greens are. Hey, David. It's good to hear. So, David, I didn't ruin your New Year's seed resolutions because I know what one of them is, and I did not know it was from New Orleans. David Hubble always has a theme. It's just that his theme is a really great theme. Is what did they used to grow in Louisiana? Is that that's fair right. to say, David? That's your theme?
Fair.
Yeah. So it's and it's a great theme because man, there was some great stuff that we used to know about and grow in Louisiana and here along the Gulf Coast. David, tell me about your New Year's seed resolutions.
Well, a couple of weeks before or a couple of days before Christmas break, I was kind of searching the internet thinking, have I exhausted all my sources of these kind of rare seeds? And somebody I knew of there in Bashery, Louisiana, sent me a message asking if I had ever seen this type of fruit. And it's something called a casa banana.
Yep.
And I had actually seen it, but I had never really looked into it. And she offered me some seeds, but it's another vining cucumber family member, which I seem to do well with. And it makes these like 12-inch, I think, 6-inch wide, 12-inch long fruits that come out around November, and they kind of look like bologna hanging down.
Yeah, that's right.
And they are very sweet, and they apparently have this wonderful fragrance that people used to put around the house to help the house smell better. And they make like a pumpkin pies and even preserves with some sugar and lemon zest. So I got a hold of some seeds, and that's my big one I'm trying for next year.
I'm glad you're doing it. So I've looked at Casa Banana for quite a while. It is in the cucurbit family. It's a very distinctive. It's not really like cucumbers at all. In a way, it's more like a melon than a cucumber. It's like a cross between a melon and a cucumber. Some people call it sausage plant because it's got these big red things. The vine is humongous, and so it's going to ask to share some space with your other humongous vines. So David, you got a yard full of humongous vines. So that's what you're going to have to figure out. You know, it's one of those vines, like melaton that they used to allow to grow up in trees. And then they would, then they hoped that they didn't kill someone when the fruits fell out of the tree and hit them on the head. But I've seen it. I keep thinking, I ought to try it. And then I think, yeah, I got to have a lot of space.
Well, I've got a tree. I'm willing to let it grow up to see if it how it does.
Yeah, and then you got to figure out how to pick the ones that get too high up. But yes,
yeah, I'll cross that road when it happens.
Yeah. So, but I had, now here's the fun part. I had no idea that it was grown, but it makes perfect sense that it would be grown in Louisiana. It's another one of those Caribbean vegetables. I'm going to call them a Caribbean vegetable that basically is a Central American. Maybe northern South America, sort of that whole crescent from the Caribbean up through the Gulf. And so New Orleans and Mobile were both Caribbean cities. Mobile forgot that it was a Caribbean city. New Orleans remembered that it was a Caribbean city for a lot longer. So a lot of those things like Melaton and Casa Banana were continued to be grown. And that's makes a lot of sense. And so good. I'm glad you're trying it.
When the woman sent me the information, I looked through some old newspapers I have online looking for that, and basically the only reference I could find in any of the newspapers was pointed back toward kind of like central South Louisiana, I guess Lafayette, Opelousas type, back to 1895, and then I know in like St. James Parish and Terrebonne in the 1920s and 40s. So I haven't really seen it too much, but it's like you said, because it's a tropical plant, would have to be grown along the Gulf Coast.
That's right. That's right. And so it's a long season plant. It really isn't. Doesn't have the problem. I don't think it has the problem of Melaton, which is that it needs short days to bloom. So I think you're going to get. It just takes a long time for the plant to develop and start blooming. But I've seen no indication that it is a short day plant. So I think you're going to do quite well with it if you've got the space for it. So I'm glad you're trying it, and then you're going to have to report to us.
Oh, yeah.
This saves me from having to do it. So I was thrilled that you, when you said, mentioned a couple of weeks ago that you were going to try Casa Banana, and you think, okay, good, I'll have to put that one on my list. David's going to try it. And then when he figures it out, then I'll try to grow it. So,
oh, yeah.
So that's good.
I'm hoping to, like I said, I'll be happy to share any seeds I collect from these going forward.
Yeah. Well, that's good. And so the key is, you know, Baker Creek has the seeds, too,
mm-hmm.
by
I've
the way.
I've seen those, yes.
Several people have the seeds. And, you know, I actually think I have a packet of seeds, and I just haven't gotten the gumption up to find the place to plant it. So, but I'm glad you're going to do it.
Okay.
Hey, David, it's always good to hear from you.
You too. I'll talk to you later.
Thanks. Dan, I want to hear it. I want to hear this new seed resolution. So we're going to be back. And speaking of bananas, Casa Banana, well, here's the other banana.
6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch. Daylight come and be one go home. 6 foot, 7 foot, 8 foot punch.
Welcome back to Plain Gardening for the Gulf Coast. Ask Bill Finch your gardening questions now at 343-0106.
Okay, welcome back. Gulf Coast Sunday morning with Plain Gardening. I have these beautiful pictures from Dan of his Japanese giant red mustards, and which are grown as ornamentals, but maybe some other varieties. But They're beautiful to eat. They're wonderful to eat. And Dan has cooked them up. Dan, tell me about cooking them mustards.
Oh, well, first of all, they were delicious.
Yeah.
And a lot. And I've heard you say it, that they were spicy. And I guess I just never noticed it when I've eaten mustard greens before. But it, you know, compared to the collards I've grown, they really were. They had a really, it wasn't like a pepper spicy. It was almost like a, I don't know, it was just different.
Okay.
And but they were delicious. And the way that the broth turned purple was really interesting, I thought.
It's beautiful. Yeah, so they are good, and they are a little bit spicier. It is a round sort of heat that is in your mouth that those greens come from, and when they're fresh, they're really good too.
Can't you mix those in with collards?
Sure, you can mix them in with collards. You know,
seems
one
like
of the,
my grandmother used to do
yeah,
that.
Yeah, sure, you can. They cook differently, and they'll get real spongy. I do different things. So a lot of times, Dan, what I'll do with those is I'll take the stems. Take the whole stem. Nothing goes to waste on those. And
right.
I'll chop the stems up, and I'll mix them with a little bit of onion or garlic and pepper and stir fry them. Okay? Get the stems softened up a bit. And then add the mustard greens and stir fry them. And I actually don't add a lot of water to it, so I don't get the purple. Just a little bit of water that maybe is on the green. And then just stir fry the leaves in last after I've cooked the stems. And that's really good, too. And you get that really – then your nose kind of kicks in. And you get that top of the nose kind of – of flavor that comes with greens that have not been cooked too much. But yeah, they're really good.
Well, I like that. It's a good idea. And so, I know to me the top of the nose flavor, because I threw one. I made a sandwich and did what you suggested.
Yeah.
Threw one a raw one on it. Oh man,
it's amazing, isn't it? And better
so good.
Better than horseradish, I think. I love horseradish. I love horseradish, but I happen to think I like horseradish is difficult to grow. It is just a pain in the patootie to grow. But these guys are the easiest thing in the world to grow, and I actually think I like them better than horseradish. But it has a little bit of that feel to it. So, Dan, before we run out of time, I want to hear your seed resolutions for the coming year.
Well, I'm I haven't been able to listen over the holidays on Sundays. I've been having to catch up with the podcast. I'm glad I got to listen today because I've been really wanting to talk to you about this.
Yeah.
I know I want to do tomatoes. Some small to cherry types. I want to try to do some Romas. I've got a whole slew of ahi peppers that I found that I want to try to. I might try to do some bananas and some jalapenos too. But I'm going to do a lot of those in my yard. But I have my fiance's parents live in Irvington.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to plant there. I mean, they got a big, maybe about an eighth or a quarter of an acre that we can plant on out there. And I want to try to do guguza, chayote, or the Merloton.
Yeah, this is making David Hubble very happy.
Yeah, well, and he's the one that kind of inspired me to want to do that. The locally grown, plants, vegetables, fruits that we've grown in the recent past that have sort of kind of fallen off. I think that's really interesting. So I'm interested to give it a try.
Yeah, good. And that's the thing, because they do take a little bit of space, And if you've got a trellis like an old muscadine trellis, what a great place to grow both of those. They'll do the are all guguza and the Merloton and the Casa Banana, which now we've all been challenged to grow by David.
I might have to try that one too, then.
Yeah, you should try it while you're out there. Casa Banana, and look for the seeds. It looks like a big sausage. Looks like a big red sausage. When the fruit forms, and it's kind of a melony cucumber kind of flavor, really distinctive. And it needs a lot of space. But yeah, you'll have to try it.
Well, so outside of all of that, and maybe some of your standard, I'm going to do yellow squash, zucchini. I want to try a couple different kinds of eggplants. Do you have any other recommendations you might make for us or me in particular, Mr. Finch?
Yeah, while you got a big space, do try some winter squash, like Seminole pumpkin. Have you ever grown Seminole pumpkin?
No, sir.
I ate some Seminole pumpkin last week, and it was absolutely delicious. And Seminole pumpkin grows about 50 feet in every direction. It is one of the Gulf Coast traditional squash. It is so traditional that it actually grows without human effort in many parts of Florida. It's hard to tell whether it was entirely native or was developed. It was probably developed, but then kind of went wild. It is this beautiful miniature pumpkin. I won't call it miniature. It's the way pumpkins are supposed to be. It's about, about 10 inches across. Maybe sometimes 12 inches across on the big ones. And little creases like pumpkins, not as dark orange as some of the pumpkins we have nowadays, but otherwise looks like a pumpkin. It is absolutely delicious. It is beautifully delicious. Very sweet, very orange. I love Seminole pumpkin. You've got space. When we will talk about what it needs to, it actually grows across the ground, so you got to kind of figure out how to weed around it, which is a minor issue, but it can be solved. So that is my recommendation. Try the Seminole pumpkin while you're out there, because it's just a great squash, a great winter squash. And
that sounds good, Mr. Finch.
Yeah.
Well, I'll add that to the list, and we'll keep you posted as we go, and I'll call you next week to maybe try to schedule out some seeding and planting times too.
All right, good, good. All right, Dan, always good to hear from you. Great pictures. Thank you. Hey, before we've got some time, Bill Keith sent me a picture, and I'm looking at it. I'm thinking, Bill, that it's a weeping mulberry. Is that possible? And I'm pretty sure that's what it is. Do you prune it? No. You see how it is. It's weeping. It's designed to weep. If any stem starts growing straight up, yeah, you kind of prune that one out because the idea is that it's supposed to weep. It's supposed to look weird, okay? Kind of spooky weird. And it does when it's full of leaves, but I'm pretty sure that's a weeping mulberry, Bill. Folks, it's been a fun morning. We gotta go now, but we'll be back next week. Maybe we'll talk more about your seed resolutions. Beautiful, beautiful Christmas cactus, Jim, in Georgetown. Beautiful looking thing. We'll be back.